We're learning Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Chof Aleph, in the middle of the Perek. We have not many Psukim left from here till the end of the Perek, but the Psukim, there were some 8 Psukim or so, but these 8 Psukim are very difficult to learn, and even more difficult to teach. It might take us a while. I'm not sure if we're going to finish it all in this week. Because, okay, first of all, before we even begin, we reached a point last week where we saw, basically, Shimshon revealed the secret of his strength, and we're reaching the tragic climax of the story here. So we begin Pasuk Chof Aleph, and then we're going to take a step back to give a post-overview. We give an overview at the beginning to sum things up, try to consolidate and understand the significance of what's happening here. So Pasuk Chof Aleph. Vayechazu Pelishtim. So basically what we saw, or actually what we'll do is we'll begin with the overview. I'm sorry. We'll begin with it, and we'll lead up to the coming Pesukim. And here, I really just have to ask for Siyata Dishmaya to properly convey what's coming. As we discussed, it doesn't take much to see that Shimshon was involved in very unusual methods. Now, if we're to understand this as greatness, as piety, as leadership of the Jewish people. So yes, this was very unusual, very original. And we already explained what he was doing. And today we have the very difficult task of explaining where he went wrong, and properly defining that. So let's just step back for a minute and again, just review. What is it that Shimshon was doing, this whole story? So as we saw, and bear with me, we're going to have some repetition here, but this is important in order to put it all into the right perspective. The Jewish people were not worthy at the time of a proper salvation. Shimshon was bringing about salvation on the merit of his own personal greatness, and therefore he was a one-man team. He didn't lead an army. He fought his wars individually. And the way he went about it was by tangling with the Pelishtim in a way that made it appear like it was his own personal vendetta with them. How did he? As we stressed many times, and we'll stress once again, to avoid repercussions against the Jewish people. He didn't want them avenging the trouble that he would make for them on the Jewish people. And therefore, he married into them. Now, as we explained, there's more to it, much more to it. And we'll present that a little bit again. Shimshon understood that he is imbued with divine strength, not only in a physical way, but also in a spiritual way. Shimshon was a man of iron capabilities also on the spiritual level, in terms of self-control, in terms of sheer spiritual strength. And he saw it as his function not only to protect the Jewish people by fighting the Pelishtim in the physical plane, but actually he was trying to bring about, work toward the ultimate tikkun, as we already quoted from the Sfarim, the role of Mashiach. He wanted to destroy the Pelishtim completely, and in doing that, he wanted to operate on the spiritual level as well. I.e., the famous concept, and again, this is repetition, bear with me, but it's important to have this all in the right perspective. We have to repeat what he was doing in order to understand what exactly was wrong, in order to try to understand. So, as we discussed, whenever you have koiches ha-tumah, forces of tumah, there's the concept of nitzoitzes, sparks of kedusha that are somehow buried, concealed in those koiches ha-tumah. and which they draw off. That's really what they draw their vitality off. Now, Shimshon wanted to destroy them on a spiritual level also, but not only that, he wanted to recapture whatever potential of Kedusha there is among the Plishtim. He wanted to recapture and bring back to the Jewish people. And therefore, the way he went about this was, he actually married Plishti women for the purpose of, yes, producing neshamas, which he would extract from the Plishti nation. He would extract whatever potential Kedusha there is there, bring it into the folds of the Jewish nation. He actually was Megayer the women he married. And thereby wring out whatever potential Kedusha there was in the Plishti nation. They'd be left devoid of any of that, and he then, once they're emptied spiritually, he could destroy them physically as well. Now, as we discussed, this was an example of what we call Avera Lishma. He was heading into dangerous territory. Very dangerous territory. I'm sorry? Oh, so let's see. So, right, the pasuk does not explicitly fault him, but we're going to see soon that he went through Gehenna in this world. We'll see. So now, Avera Lishma is a pious concept which we're not meant to exercise. A person decides he's going to go on a track that usually is impious, but he's doing it because of a greater function. This is something that is beyond our realm. Don't try to figure out the rules of how you apply this. But Shimshon was figuring, as we said before, he was entering that zone of starting with Plishti women, looking for Plishti women, right? And in fact, Chazal say that he had a special koyach, a special power of womanizing, of attracting women. He had a special power of doing this, and he understood this as his role in bringing about the ultimate tikkun. Now, he also knew that he has the spiritual power to be able to do these things without sullying himself spiritually at all, without dirtying himself spiritually at all. He would be able to operate, like we mentioned many times, he'll be partying with Plishti girls. I imagine it's like a person going to a casino in Las Vegas or the worst places, going there but feeling like he's a Kohen Gadol operating the Kodesh HaKadosh, completely unaffected by the physical activities he's engaged in, not enjoying them, operating only L'Shem Shamayim for the purpose he's trying to achieve. This is what was going on. Now, by stepping into that zone, he's putting himself up to quite a challenge. And basically, he's saying, yes, I'm going into territory that's ordinarily forbidden. It's ordinarily forbidden territory. Forbidden waters, right? When you're doing that, and you're trying to operate on the level of what we call Avera Lishma, you have to be 100% sure. You have to be 100% sure that you are going to be able to maintain that absolute pure motive, that absolute L'Shem Shamayim. Unlike other mitzvahs, as we stressed, if you enjoy the mitzvah, it certainly doesn't make it into an Avera. When you're doing something that's really an Avera, just not doing it because you're trying to achieve greater things, here, you have to keep 100% L'Shem Shamayim the whole time. You can't be mixing any personal feelings in, because once you're enjoying it at all, it turns into an Avera. You can only do it if it's absolutely pure. That's what turns that Avera into a mitzvah. That's what turns the Avera into a very great salvation, to a great tikkun for Klal Yisrael, etc., etc. And Shimshon was confident that he could do that. Okay? Now, at the end of the day, what happens? He goes through his different exploits, and then, as we saw, he's attracted to Delilah. He's attracted to Delilah. As we saw, the pasuk actually uses the term, whereas with the previous women he involved himself with, he was playing games with them, wasn't interested in them, and it was really just his ways of doing what he needed to do. It says about Delilah Vayehav, he loved her, meaning he really felt drawn to her and attracted to her, and he acted on that attraction. Now this also, we have to understand that this was also something deep. First of all, Shimshon, as we saw, he was at a level where he was attributing everything in his life to the hand of Hashem. And therefore, he even attributed the feelings he had to the hand of Hashem. And he felt that if he's being attracted to her, this is where the hand of Hashem is leading him. And he actually saw in her, as we discussed, his partner for achieving the great tikkun he was meant to achieve. Meaning here, he wasn't just using a plishti woman for his purposes. He saw in her, like we discussed last week, the Rachel, who Yeshua married, the Rus, who ultimately mothered David HaMelech. That's who he saw in Delila. Was he wrong? Questionable. Rav Moshe David Vali, there's a machlokes here between, we're talking about a clash of very great Kabbalists. Rav Moshe David Vali says, again, this is a famous Talmud of the Ramchal, he says that actually she was inherently from the forces of Tuma. She herself might not have even realized that, but she was put there for the purpose of providing with the test, and he was deceived by her appearances, meaning by what he construed, what he made her out to be. And he actually fell into the trap of the Koichas HaTuma. Fine. Reb Tzadik HaKohen says that even that's not quite as simple as that. Reb Tzadik HaKohen says that she actually was able to be that woman. She actually was able to be that woman. She was able to share his ideals. And it could have been that yes, he would have achieved the tikkun together with her as a partner, and she would have gone down in history as on the list of Rachav and of Tzipira, the wife of Moshe, and of what was the last one we mentioned? Ya'el, Rus, right? The great potential neshamas among the Umas Ha'olam. But she herself went off. She herself, something interesting, Tzadik HaKohen says that the one area she was not quite above yet was the Tzahara of money. And that's where the Plishti officers managed to get a foothold in with her. Fine. But whatever it is, where did Shimshon go wrong? Where did Shimshon go wrong? And here we have a machloikis between the general approach we've been giving up till now is the general approach shared by Radak, Rav Moshe David Vali, Rav Tzadik HaKohen, Rav Dessler, Rav Avigdor Miller. What exactly was the point he went wrong on is mysterious. It's something of a mystery. And we're going to give a couple of approaches. And even though generally we try here to just go with one approach and give a clear mahalach, the whole story of Shimshon is something of a mystery, and therefore it's good enough if we leave it as a mystery, but instead of, we're going to turn it from a hazy mystery into a bit more of an educated mystery. That's what we're going to try to do here. Okay. So according to the Radak, where he went wrong was, as we said before, you want to be operating on the level of Avera Lishma. Now what was he doing? He was getting into the most base activities, right? The most base activities. Dealing with women, one of the greatest Yetzer Haras, confident that he would be able to remain completely unaffected. He wouldn't feel anything. He'd be completely above it. And once he got involved with Delila, he already did fall. He slipped a little bit. He was already starting to enjoy it for its own sake. And that mixed into all of his Kavanas L'Shem Shammai. Now, in and of itself, if you're talking about normal circumstances, what's wrong with that? Well, and again, we're talking about a person who's really in a place where he shouldn't be, if not for the fact that he's just there for the purpose of tikkun olam, etc., etc.
But you said that he was actually using his feelings to guide him directly.
Right, that's right. And this is where he was misled. What he construed as a divinely guided feeling was actually a personal feeling of him, we'll use the words, falling for a woman. On a very subtle level.
Yaakov, but also, the Yaakov, 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 the Yaakov divine guidance. How does someone of that madriga know how to differentiate?
Someone of that madriga knows, and it's tough. That's really the only answer we have. We can't explain this. But in that madriga, he should have been able to discern, and this was the lemaisa, the blame against him, according to this understanding, that no, this is already plain physical attraction, not Ruach HaKodesh. But he was drawn by that. Yes, very, very subtle. But this is lemaisa, the blame that's leveled against him. It could only be leveled against him because of the very, very great level he was operating on. If we want to give a mashal for this, like talking about a person who's taking on himself to be in a river, in a flowing river, and to be treading water for 2 hours straight and keep his head above water. This is basically what Shimshon HaGibbo was doing on the spiritual level. And his failing was that for a moment, his head slipped under the water. And therefore, the Lishim Shamayim was taken down. That turned it into an Avera. Now, ordinarily, a person put into such a situation might not even be blamed for that. But since Shimshon entered this zone knowingly, he's now going to be held terribly and horribly accountable for the tiniest slip because of his greatness. So the truth is that it's questionable. It's a machlokes whether he was actually megayed lilo or not. It's a machlokes. But even assuming that he was, again, this is certainly not the ideal path for a person to choose. So even if we'll say that technically there was no actual halachic aveira, certainly this is not a thing that a Jew should be doing, unless there's that absolute purpose of tikkun olam. This is how the Radak explains where he went wrong. Then there's Reb Tzadok HaKohen with Reb Dessler, who'll make it even a bit more subtle. They say that even that's not true. No, there were no wrong feelings there. What was the problem? The problem was, and this is mamish subtle, the problem was that he was too confident of his own spiritual capability and he was blamed for taking the risk. Or we'll refine that even a little bit more. Huh?
Meaning he denied his
faith? Wait. Well, we'll refine it a bit more. What Reb Tzadok HaKohen says was that he thought that he's on the level. Ultimately, there's a concept of Chazal saying, again, he was taking on very big Yetzirah. And Chazal say, ordinarily, of course, we're told you have to steer clear of the Yetzirah. But Lamaisa, Yitzro Shel Adam is Gaber Alav B'Chol Yom. It says the Yetzirah is a very formidable enemy. And Nilmolei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oizra Yen Yocholim. If you don't have Hashem's assistance, you cannot overcome it. Meaning, at the end of the day, you have to realize you put in all your efforts, but at the end of the day, you have to bank on and invoke and beg for Hashem's assistance. Shimshon thought that he was at such a madrega, the ultimate tikkun. He was trying to achieve the ultimate tikkun, meaning the ultimate Mashiach time, that's what he was trying to achieve, where we're already at that level where we on our own can overcome the Yetzer Hara, and therefore he did not ask for Hashem's help. He didn't ask for Hashem's help. He tried and managed to put in his immense spiritual powers to overcome without invoking Hashem's help. We find a similar concept, just to bring the point home a bit more. We find a similar concept about Klal Yisrael as a whole. It says that at Har Sinai, just want to bring home this point. At Har Sinai, Hashem tells the Jewish people, Hashem says, Mi'itein v'ahoya levavam ze liyira oisi kol hayom. Would it be, Hashem says, halevai that it should be, who would grant that the same way they fear me now, they should fear me for all of time? That's what Hashem says. Simply understood, it's a praise for Klal Yisrael we're at Har Sinai. Who would grant that they should remain at this level for all of time? So we take it as a rhetorical question. Hashem is saying, look what a great madriga they're on. Rachazal say no. Hashem was asking a question. Who can grant me that the Jewish people will remain on this level at all time? What was the response? There was no response. Chazal say that was a failing on the part of the Jewish people. They should have answered, "You grant." They should have answered, "You grant." What does this mean? What does this mean? What this means is that the Jewish people at that time were at a very, very great madrig. Where they stood then, we can identify this in a way. Where they stood then, it's unthinkable that they would drop from it. And they were so pleased, righteous satisfaction with the fact that they had managed to climb this high. They said, "No, we want to hold on to this through our own efforts. We want to hold on to this through our own efforts." Rav Kirzner makes this point. And therefore, they did not say, "Hashem, you do it." No. We got here. We want to be the ones doing it. Oh, but that was a mistake. Because you have to take into account that what you feel now at Har Sinai is not necessarily what you're going to be feeling on a regular, dreary day 300 years down the road. And therefore, they're faulted for not having said, "Atotite." Hashem asked, "Who will grant this?" They should have said, "You grant it." Right? Kind of like sometimes we feel inspired on Yom Kippur. Right? "I'll never say a nasty word to my wife again. How could I?" You know, standing inspired. Right? But you're not taking into account the bad news on some rainy Teves night. Right? When you're already, it hasn't been Yom Kippur already for quite a few months. And you're back to good old you. So you have to take advantage and say, no, Hashem, if I'm at a certain madrega and you're offering to lock it in, I'll take it. What will be afterwards? What will I get through my own personal avoida? Don't worry about it. There will always be room for avoida. But this, according to Rav Tzedek HaKohen, was the mistake of Shimshon. He was operating on a spiritual level of like what Bar Kochba said. I'm relying on my own spiritual powers. I'm not invoking Hashem's help. I'm not asking for Hashem's help.
Specifically in this area.
In this area, yeah.
So, did the punishment already start when we went with this first one?
According to this, this was a mistake that was already inherent from the beginning. A very subtle mistake, but a mistake that was inherent already from the beginning. And what's that? Oh. Right, that's where the mistake started. Okay. Along similar lines, Rav Dessler basically says the same thing, but from a different angle. He says the very fact that he felt that he could comfortably rely on his judgment, he was too confident in that. He was too confident in that. Which is another way of kind of saying what we just said now. Whatever it is, we're talking about something very subtle. We're talking about something very subtle, but for a man who was taking on to achieve the ultimate tikkun, right? Who was taking on to single-handedly achieve the completion of all the whole sequence of history, he had to be able to be above these things. And this is why Lemaisa, he fell. And now what happens? So now let's begin Pasuk Chofal. Perak Tazayin Pasuk Chofal. Ve'chazu Plishtim. Here we come to perhaps the most difficult psukim to learn in Sefer Shoftim. Vayechazu Plishtim, the Plishtim grabbed him. Vayenakru es Einov, and they gouged out his eyes. Vayeridu oisei Azasa, they took him down to Aza. Now he lost all of his strength. Vayasru bin Chushtaim, they bound him in copper chains. Vayehi toichein beveis Asur, and they made him grind in the prison. They put him to work at the mill. Okay. So now you're also, I just want to back up again and elaborate a little bit more on exactly what happened at this point. If we back one pasuk up, the truth is, excuse me, this is not professional. But I'm going to back one pasuk up to the last pasuk we did last week. Before this pasuk. Pasuk Chaf. After Delilah shaved his head, when he told her the secret, that says, she shaved his head, Vataima, and she said, Plishtim alecha Shimshon. The Plishtim are upon you, Shimshon. Vayikatz mishnasa, he woke up from his sleep. Vayoimer, Eitzei kipam bifam v'inoer. I'm going to go out, like I always did. Meaning, he's not worried. I just have to shake myself a little bit. As we said, he woke up, he already felt weakened. when he woke up. But he thought, it's because I'm sleepy, I just woke up. I'll wake myself up, I'll go out, and I'll take them on like I've always done. What is there, 2,000 plishtim outside? Say that, we'll deal with it. But he didn't know that Hashem departed from him. So now again, I want to bring home what actually happened here. As we said last week, I just want to develop a little more what we said last week. He knew he was shaving. He knew he was shaving. The person notices that. He had long locks. Right? He knew he was shaving. Yet, as we already said, Shimshon lived with the clear realization that there's no segulas here. Right? It's not about my hair or not my hair. It's because Hashem is operating through me. Shimshon lived with that clear realization. And even more than that, we already saw earlier, Shimshon lived at a level of consciousness where he couldn't fathom Chilul Hashem. He couldn't fathom, as we saw earlier, that a God-fearing Jew should fall into the hands of a plishtim. As we saw earlier, that was reason for Hashem to not let him fall into the hands of the plishtim. So Shimshon felt the same way. It's inconceivable that a person like me, after all, he said, the very fact that I have a meal already is enough of a reason that I shouldn't fall into their hands. So he went out. He went out confidently, relying on Hashem. But the unthinkable reality was that it was those subtle sins, which again, he himself might not have thought, this would be reason for Hashem to actually let me fall into the hands of the priesthood. But yes, Hashem had very, very high demands from those very, very great people. And a person like Shimshon, if the tikkun was not going to be perfect, it was a failure. It was a failure. And therefore, yes, what Shimshon thought unthinkable now became the reality. What's that? Oh, so let's see. So then what happened was, taka the unthinkable, vayichazu plishtim. The plishtim grabbed him, vayinaku es einov. They gouged out his eyes. This is harsh punishment for what we've been describing. They took him down to Aza. They bound him in copper chains. And they put him to work grinding in the prison. So here, Chazal already bring out the point that Be'enav, they gouged out his eyes in order to bring home the point of Be'enav Morad. Where he went wrong was with his eyes. He trusted his eyes, meaning he trusted his own construal. He was a little too confident. He didn't properly assess the spiritual dangers involved, and he relied a little bit too much on his own capabilities. And therefore, it was his eyes that were gouged out. But the Ben Ish Chai says a very interesting point, stresses. The way Chazal term it is, Be'enav Morad. Chazal don't say Be'enav Chota. Why doesn't it say he sinned with his eyes? It says he rebelled with his eyes. Ben Ish Chai says, here Chazal are alluding to the true Madrega of Shimshon. We think, again, you read this superficially, you see, he fell for a bunch of plishti women. Right? This is a person who's involved with all kinds of base activities. So Ben Ish Chai says something amazing. The term morad, in terms of an avera, is what we call, usually, it's the worst kind of avera. Morad, to rebel, is when you do an avera without any benefit. Morad is what we call Shavi Keteneh V'Ochil Isur, where the person, for no reason at all, he could have enjoyed the same thing in a mutter way, he decided to do it in an usher way. Usually it's used to denote the worst form of sin, rebelliousness. What? Lahakitz, yeah. So here the Ben Ish Chai says, we're using the same term, but it's bringing across the opposite point. Here, it seems like the clearest thing. He's getting involved with all these women. This is chet, this is not merit. It's the Yetzer Hara at its best. No. There was no hana'ah here. If we're going to describe it as a chet, it wasn't the term morah. Now, again, this will depend on the different approaches we discussed earlier. If this means in the general way there was no hana'ah, but there was that tiny element of hana'ah. Or that in fact there was no pleasure at all. That was not his sin. With all of his involvement, he was above it all on the physical level. And that wasn't what he was held accountable for. Whatever it is, it's mara. It's not a chet of where a person just gave in to his natural urges. No, we're talking about something that was not hana'ah. Or at least on a very, very subtle level. Not on a simple level. All of his engagement with these Plishti women. Then they took him down to Aza. And Chazal say that here, yes, Hashem is giving to Shimshon a message. Hashem is, in a very, very tough way, we couldn't live up to this sort of treatment. But Hashem is showing Shimshon. In Aza, that's where you fell. It was with Aza where he started with Delilah and with the other woman. Perhaps back in Timnah, everything was fine. He wasn't really attracted to her. He really was in full control. It was in Aza where he started losing his absolute control over the situation. And therefore he's brought back to Aza. Hashem is making a point to Shimshon. And yes, he was put to work grinding in the prison. So here I want to go through the Chazals here. You know, some harsh things that are tough to deal with. Chazal says something also here, very tough to swallow. It says that he was grinding in the prison. Chazal say, you know what was going on? They captured Shimshon. Shimshon was a person to see. We already mentioned that he was lame. But he was built the way you'd expect him to be built. Because I'll tell us, very muscular person. And the Plishtim is a classic example of Plishtim morality. The Plishtim brought him their wives to prison. They wanted to leave their wives with him so that they should have children like him. This is what they were doing. This is what he was subject to in prison. He wasn't able to do anything about it. This is what was going on in the prison. Isn't that tragic? What was going on here? What was going on here? So here also, it's like I said before, what was going on here was that Shimshon, this is a privilege that only the most righteous are given, was being put through Gehenim here, not in the next world. Ramchal says something to consider here. So you know what a very element of Gehenim is? When a person comes to the upper world, all of a sudden he sees everything clearly, he sees the truth. All of a sudden he feels disgusted at the things that he did back in this world. Those averus. Right? When he sees now, let's say a person is Mechal Shabbos, Chas V'Shalom. Amazing. Right? Knowingly is Mechal Shabbos. Disregard, doesn't care. Reaches the next world, sees what it means to spit in Hashem's face. Right? He's disgusted. He can't live with himself. He's mortified. And then what's he told? Ramchal says, be Mechal Shabbos again. Part of the Gehenim is that they make the person react to the sin right now when he's fully aware of how disgusting, how terrible it is, but they put him through it. Now he's going to keep doing it. He's going to keep doing what he did in this world. And therefore, Shimshon, he was already made aware of where he had fallen here. And now what's happening now? He's in prison. He's being bought one Plishti woman after the other. One Plishti woman after the other. Ramchal says, because yes, Hashem wanted to give him the opportunity of finishing it all up in this world. And therefore not having any ceiling when he comes to the next world. Not being held back in any way. He's going to completely pay off whatever cheshbonos he has here in a terrible way. Which is only relevant for, which is, yes, how we see how Hashem shows favor to nobody. At the end of the day, failures have to be atoned for. But Imamish Gehenim was brought him in this world, which means that he was also given the opportunity to acknowledge, to see what's going on, and to be able to reach a full tshuva. So what happens? Vayochel sa'roshay v'tzameach kasher gula. Now the Navi says something ominous, at least towards the Plishtim. Shimshon is in prison. He's been weakened, his hair was shaven off, he's weak, he's defeated, he's disgraced. But something starts happening. His hair is starting to sprout again. Now what was going on here? In prison, and the truth is, obviously we understand the significance of this. This is a siman that the old powers are coming back. Now, the Plishtim knew this. The Plishtim knew this. One would think that they'd be on top of the situation. They wouldn't let his hair come back. Right? They'd have an on-duty barber there, right, ready to shave. So the Mefarshim say that what was going on here was something miraculous. It started sprouting before it should have. They did make a point of keeping it shaven, but you don't have to shave more than once in every so often. I guess they had it timed. But here, in prison, you asked, was he disappointed? Was he turned off? The answer is no. He internalized the lesson, and what was he doing in prison? The Tzaddik says, Abba Benel says, he wept, and he did tshuva. This is what was going on in prison. And therefore, suddenly his hair started sprouting. But Shimshon's ordeal is not finished yet. V'sarnei plishtim nesfu, v'zbayach zevach godol ledogen elehe. As far as the plishtim were concerned, after 20 years of being terrorized, they finally won. Right? The officers of the plishtim all got together to have a barbecue, to make a big slaughtering in honor of Dagon, their god. Ulesimcha, they have a good time. Vayoymu, and they said, Nasan Eloheinu biyodeinu es Shimshon oyveinu. Look, our God has delivered our enemy Shimshon into our hands. They're already starting their downfall. Minchiktana points out, he says, were they blind? How did they capture him? They captured him by desecrating his Nazirus. They didn't see that it's all an issue of the rules that Hashem set up. How could they say our God delivered him into his hand? They didn't see clearly that the way they captured him was by being mechallel his kedusha. How blind could they be? I guess the answer is pretty blind. Okay. Vayiru Isayah. Now, the place where they were celebrating was in view of the prison. And the people who were all the celebrants saw him. They saw him grinding in the prison. And they praised their God, Kiamu, because they said, Nosan Eloheinu biyadeinu es oyveinu. Listen to this. Listen how an army, how a kingdom is describing one man. Our God has delivered our enemy into his hand. Es machriv arzeinu, the destroyer of our land. Asher hirbo es chalaleinu, who generated so many dead bodies in our midst. Here with this one man, they're summing up basically Shimshon's career. Vayehi kitoiv libam bayoy. And it was, the police chief did their thing as they got more and more drunk. Vayemru, and they said, kiru li Shimshon, bring Shimshon out, v'yisacheklon, let him perform for us. Vayikru li Shimshon mibeis ha'asurim, and they had Shimshon brought from the prison. Vayitzachek lifnei, and he was made to perform for them. By the way, Chazal say that the plishtim, their strong point was leitzanus, the tzchok. Now, Shimshon is here. What's going on here? They bring out tormented, defeated man. He's blind. They bring him in. They make him perform. We don't know what they did. You can envision, right? You bring him. He's blind. He can't see where he's going. As we already discussed earlier, Shimshon was a man who lived way above these things. And the very lifestyle of the plishtim so turned them off. And now he hears them yet attributing it all to their God. His sentiments are still where they always were. Now, Vayomer Shimshon el ha'nar ha'machzik biyado. Shimshon says to the youth who was holding his arm, he needed to be held up. Hanicha oisi, let go of me for a minute. Now let me just lean on the pillars, the main central pillars of the building. Let me lean on them. Okay. Now, so he moved him over to the central pillars and he's leaning on them. The building was packed with men and women. Vishama kol sarnei plishtim. That's where all the officers of the plishtim are. All the who's who of the plishtim were there. They were all invited. It was a privilege. You get a pass into this party. Now, if we want an idea of how many people were there, You just get a bit of a hint as to how many people there. Al Hagag Kishloishes Haloshim Ibshviisha. On the roof, there were about 3,000 men and women Horoyim Vizchoik Shimshon, who were all watching Shimshon perform. So Chazal said it's the roof. I mean, it was like kind of like a balcony. It was a roof that you could see down into the building what's going on. On that roof, there were 3,000 men and women who were able to see, meaning the front row on the roof was 3,000 people. I mean, the people were able to see. The 3,000 people. So Chazal say, we have no idea. There's obviously much bigger numbers in this building. By the way, Reb Tzadik, just in order to bring home the experience, Reb Tzadik says, among the men and women who were there, there was Dalila and his old friends are now watching in Maki. Okay. And now we focus on Shimshon. What's Shimshon thinking now? What's Shimshon feeling now? So Shimshon acknowledged everything. As we saw, he did a heartfelt tshuva. He wept. And now he's out here and he has no tightness at all. He's not bitter at all. On the contrary, he acknowledges he's a broken man. His great ambition, he failed. The big campaign of his life, he failed. Right? As far as he was concerned, this was black and white. That's the way Hashem deals with the righteous. Hashem didn't say, well, it was pretty good and a couple of faults. That's how he deals with us, maybe. But with the righteous, it was black and white. There was that point 001 off, failure. It was black and white. Shimshon understood. But he says, Vayikra Shimshon el Hashem. Shimshon calls out to Hashem. Vayoyma, Hashem Elohim, Zochreinino, please remember me. Chazkeinino achapam, and give me my strength one more time. Chapam azeh Elohim, this one more time, Elohim. And let me avenge one of my two eyes from the plishtim. So what's going on here? So let's understand what Shimshon is saying. And we might even have to put the last three psukim off for next week. But let's understand what Shimshon is saying. Shimshon is saying as follows. Shimshon already has his plan. Shimshon, we know what he's going to do. Where does he even get the thought that he's going to be able to do this? He knows that he lost his strength, right? He knows that he's weak, and he knows that he's helpless now. But as we said, Shimshon lived on a level of emunah, a level of that clear consciousness of Hashem and Hashem's involvement. We discussed last week that at the point where he actually succumbed to Dalila was at the point where he saw that he had failed in his mission. We discussed that last week. When she made it impossible for him to have children and achieve what he was trying to achieve, and on the contrary, the whole relationship was just destructive in terms of having children, he saw that he had gotten to the complete opposite place where he had gotten. In a moment of yush, in a moment of despair, he just said, if so, all is lost, whatever, it doesn't matter anymore. And that was when he gave away the secret. And now Shimshon has done his complete tshuva. He's coming around the other way around, exactly the opposite. Now he's confident Hashem will give him this one last chance to make amends. And therefore, yes, he has the boldness to expect that he's going to be able to do what he's about to do. So again, but let's note what Shimshon is asking for. Again, Shimshon is coming from a place of what? Failure. Right? Let's compare this. Right? We saw at Ya'el where she experienced the thrill of being told by the Navi, your great Aveir Lishma made it. And now you've put yourself down in history like Sarah, Rivka, Rachel and Leah. Shimshon just experienced the opposite. Everything you invested all your koichos into was one big failure, and now you're in Gehenna. And this is where Shimshon is coming from now. And what's he saying? He says, Hashem, this is what Reb Chaim Vital, Reb Tzadik bring this across. And express this in a few ways, because it should be expressed in a few ways. Shimshon said, I believed that I was able to reach a situation where the body and soul are in absolute unity. Like we said before, where the body won't have any sway. The body's feelings will mean nothing. I'll be completely above that. The body will just be a means, a tool of the soul. I'll only be guided by the Yetzer Tov, by the Neshama, by my spiritual level. And the body will simply be an appendage to that. And I failed. My body got its foot in. My body was able, like we saw before, the taiva kicked in. And my body made me slip. He says, and therefore he says, Hashem, give me the opportunity to sacrifice my body, to destroy my body, in order to, I know I failed. Let me destroy my body in order to save my soul. This is what he's requesting here. This is how Reb Tzadok HaKohen puts it. And Reb Chaim Vital adds, he says, Inokmo nikam achas mishtei inay miplishtim. We understood it simply, he's saying, let me take the revenge of one of my eyes from the plishtim. Reb Chaim Vital says, let me avenge myself against my eyes. Let me destroy the body that got me to where I am right now, in order to save my soul. What's that?
Why one of my eyes?
Oh, so why one of my eyes? At the end of the day, the pashtus is also true. And he was speaking on two levels. Now he said, like Chazal tell us, he said one of my eyes, because he said, I want to invoke, we're getting back to the pashat of pshat, I want to invoke the merit of one of my eyes. The rest I want to save for Olam Haba. But I want you to grant me the merit of one of my eyes, and allow me to do what I want to do now.
Not only Yisulim, you see the greatness of Yisulim, Yisulim and the Yisulim to be Masliach, not on the Spirit, Yisulim and
Yisulim. Oh, very good. He's invoking the Zchus of the Yisurim, of the suffering that he just went through, which, as we saw now, did bring him back to a very great level, to be able to do what he does. And Vayilpas. Now Shimshin moves ahead. And again, we're seeing back that same, he's still the same Shimshin. The Shimshin who proceeds with the absolute confidence that this is just Hashem operating here. Who of us would grab hold of a pillar and try to yank it back? And again, he knows that he lost his strength there. Vayilpas Shimshin, after putting out that heartfelt plea, Shimshin hugged Eshne Amudei HaTavech HaShah Abayis Nochen Aleim. He hugged. Apparently it was between these two massive pillars. He hugged the two pillars that the house was resting on. And he pushed with all his strength against them, with his right hand and with his left hand. Now, okay, again, I don't want to get out yet of the stage. You know, let's put in proper attention, even though this was happened in an issue of seconds, proper attention on what was going through his mind, what he was actually saying. Let's analyze his tefillah a little bit. Because now he's leaning and he's hoping that he's going to get the tzchus. So he says, let's just go back to the words that he says. And I'm going to read it with the Shemes Hashem. I'm going to read the pasuk again. Vayikra Shimshon el Adonai, vayema Adonai Elohim. First he says, Hashem. And then he says, Hashem Elohim. It's Rachamim with Din. Please, give me the strength one more time, Elohim. That's Din. Meaning he's turning first, Hashem. I believe that I still have, again, as far as he's concerned, he sees himself. He failed. But yet he says, I'm appealing to the Midas HaRachamim. I believe that I still do have a chance. I still do have a place in the Midas HaRachamim of Hashem. And therefore he says, he moves on and he says, Hashem Elohim. He wants to be shown the Rachamim Bedin. Yes, he's in a big situation of Midas Hadin right now. But he says, Hashem Elohim, I believe that there's Rachamim Bedin. And I'm confident about that. But at the end of the day, he knows where he stands right now, and therefore at the end, he says, strengthen me this one more time, O Elohim. At the end of the day, I know that Lamaisa, right now, I'm dealing with absolute Midas Hadin. And therefore, I'm asking, even from a perspective of Midas Hadin, give me this one last chance. let me destroy my own body and save my soul. And thereby also, Mefarshim add, he wanted to atone for the Chilul Hashem caused through his death. He wanted to also preclude the Chilul Hashem that would be caused from everything that was going on here. But he hears them attributing it to their God and everything. Vayemer Shimshon, and Shimshon cries out as he's leaning against the pillars, Tamoy snafshi im Pelishtim, let me die with the Pelishtim. Vayet mekoyach, and he pushed with all his strength. Vayipal habayis al asronim, and the entire building collapsed on the officers. Vakol ha'amashel boy, and on everybody who was there. Vayiu ha'meisim asher heinis memoisa, and the people he killed in his death. Rabbi Masha Hemis Pachayov were more than he had killed in his lifetime. This is very significant. He didn't achieve the tikkun he was trying to achieve. It was not achieved. The Plishtim continued to rule. And it took David HaMelech later to completely destroy them. Didn't achieve it. He missed his life's mission. But yes, he achieved very, very great things in his life. This was not taken away from him. But now he's already at the point of the failure, and he's at the point of trying to do a comeback, trying to come back and do tshuva. His tshuva was so successful that that last act of his outdid all of the great achievements of his life. He rose to a higher madrega at that last moment, which shot him above. We already saw this was a very, very great man. Shot him above everything he had done in his lifetime. This is what we see, the concept of Mokam Shabali Tshuva Oindim and Tzadikim Gvurim Yichodim Lamoy. The feeling of his determination to be able to fix what he had ruined motivated him so that he reached a level of piety, reached a level of pure intent. As great as he had been beforehand, he was catapulted. Now, I shouldn't say he was catapulted. He's feeling he catapulted himself to a higher level of greatness. He shot above everything he had reached throughout his lifetime. Okay, so I know that we're basically done, but we can't stop here. We're just going to finish the next two psukim. Bear with me. Vayerdu achi v'chol beis aviyu, and his brothers and all of his father's family came down, vayisu oisu, and they carried his body away. Vayalu vayikbiru oisu ben tzora uven eshtoi bekever manayach aviv, and they came up and they buried him between tzora and eshtoi. Remember, that's where he first started his career, in the grave of his father Manayach. Vehu shofat es Yisrael arbaim shana, esrim shana. He judged the Jewish people for 20 years. There's a lot of significance in these psukim, in this list, possible. First of all, let's just ask a very technical, simple question. It's a question that should occur to the technical minded among us. Well, they were able to get his body out? You know what just happened here, right? He was in the bottom of a pileup of, I don't know if we'll say 10,000 people, with an entire building collapsed on him. Bereishis Rabbah says that this was a nis. Bereishis Rabbah says that this was a nis. His body was intact and immediately accessible. He was at the top of the pile. Everybody else was mangled, smashed corpses. His body was intact and was at the top of the pile. What's being brought across here of Tzadik? This is the beautiful ending to this tragic story. What did he say? He said to Hashem, grant me the opportunity to save my soul by destroying my body. And what's the end of the story? Not only did he save his soul, his body was saved. His body was saved. He was zoichet to be brought to Kavura in a respectable way. And another point to bring out is that how did his family dare to approach? Right? The Jews dared to come after this happened. So we have to understand, this is going to say now, it says, Hushafat Yisrael Aboyim Shana. What just happened here in terms of the Plishtim, let's just get technical, was an atom bomb. You ever saw that? If you heard the descriptions of what actually happened in Hiroshima, right? When they actually dropped the atom bomb, the way it's described was, in the rest of Japan, there was just radio silence. Nobody understood what happened. All of a sudden, there's no contact. So they tried to make contact, but there was nothing there. There was nothing left, right? They tried to make contact with Hiroshima. There was nothing until finally they sent a plane to actually see what was going on. Why can't they contact anybody there? In none of the bases. They couldn't dream of what actually happened. A plane came and simply encountered a big, black, empty lot that used to be Hiroshima. There's a plane landed and the guy just came out and was walking around in shock. This is what happened here. The Plishtim were decimated. All the who's who of the Plishtim were wiped out here. And that's why the pasuk continues and says, "Hushafat es Yisrael arba'im shana." Sorry, esrim shana. He judged the Jewish people for 20 years. Chazal say, you know what that means? It means another 20 years. He protected the Jewish people for another 20 years. It took 20 years for the Plishtim to get over what happened here. All the who's who. Imagine, right? So they the Pentagon, right? Imagine if the U.S. Army, everyone from general to lieutenant, will be wiped out. They have a lot of privates left, right? This is what happened here. They were decimated. There was nothing for the Jewish people to be afraid of. They were able to come comfortably, take out his body. A new era had begun. The Plishtim were now powerless. They regained their power, but right now they were powerless. Actually, the Kavan Eda adds one point, and with this we'll conclude.
Left an impact on the Jews to keep going with Hashem for 20 years?
That's interesting insight. I hear. The Kavan Eda adds one point. Again, when Chazal say that it took 20 years, for 20 years the Plishtim didn't after his death, the Plishtim didn't abuse the Jewish people, the Kavan Eda says that actually what happened was they came back and in the whole mess they didn't find his body. His body was already gone. By the time Plishtim came from other places, and again they were trying to contact their generals, by the time they came from other places, his body was gone. They were searching for his body and they didn't find it. They were sure he was still alive hiding out somewhere. It took 20 years until they realized that no, he's gone and he's not coming back. Okay.